Whether you've overdone it at the gym, at the dinner table, or on the couch, AHM Health Insurance have a cover for you. Join direct at ahm.com.au.
On 1116 SEN, Bush and the Burbs for Toyota's Good for Footy program. Local Toyota dealers supporting local clubs. Discover more at toyota.com.au/AFL.
Well, Def.
G'day, Fonny.
How are you? This is a bit counterintuitive, but our local football, which is normally suburban or country Victorian, is... For the first half of the program, going to be anything but local. Couldn't be farther afield, really, as we embrace the International Cup and have one of the key players in terms of coaching in the studio with us. It's hardly local, though.
No, it's not. We're just speaking of Tom Ellis, who's the USA coach. USA is not local at all, finally. But they do have a strong... Look, my limited understanding is that there's a strong footy... It's a national competition over there. They do things national in the States. They do things big. But one of my brothers played for the Fort Lauderdale Fighting Squids in a few of these carnivals, which they have in the first weekend of October each year, I think. And it's a massive thing. They come from all over the States. It started small with probably three or four teams.
Correct.
But then, boom, they're from all over the place now. Phil used to speak of them with great fondness.
Well, you would if you played for the Farting Squids or whatever they were called.
Fighting Squids. I've still got the T-shirt.
Fighting, was it?
There's a picture of a fighting squid on the T-shirt.
I'll get you a jumper.
It's a beauty. I washed the house in it.
Tom Ellis, welcome with it. Okay. To 1116 SEN. And in the broader context, welcome down under with your USA International Cup team.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Now, Nigel Carmody has stuck around because there's a connection here as well.
And it's a privilege for me to be on what is my favourite show on SEN, I say, only for the first segment.
You say that to all the co-hosts.
No, Nigel. That's not true, Daff. I'll be listening on the drive home. Tom, thanks so much for your time. First obvious question is, how does a guy who grew up in Texas, then spent time in Denver, Colorado, end up playing Australian rules football?
Yeah, just started watching it back in the 80s. It was ironic that I wore the same basketball shorts at that time. So I was destined to play Australian football at some point. But yeah, I started watching it then. And then in the late 90s, when the internet really started connecting people, somebody said, let's start a club. And at that point, I was done with American football. And I was like, yeah, let's go out and try it. One game, I'm in. And here it is, 17 years later, I'm still playing.
Now, even though your story is hardly typical in America, the fact is that American football is not something that you can play at a sort of non-professional social level once you finish with college and once you've taken it to as far as it can go in search of professional or semi-professional ball, you don't have the same local football structure as Aussie rules, do you?
Correct. It's once you're done with college is the last step of that career, and then that's it. There's some rec leagues that you can play some flag football, which isn't real tackle, and there's some they'll call it semi-pro, but not much of that. And then, you know, you've got the arena ball, but overall, it's pretty much over. You're done. By the time you're 21, you're done.
So somebody like you, and I'm sure that there are thousands like you, got a hankering to play a good contact sport. Rugby would probably loom large. I know it's popular in the States, but I guess canvassing for Australian rules football would not be out of the question.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it really is the best sport going. People just don't know it. If you're an American and you love, we all want to be quarterbacks. So that's what we say. This is like everybody gets to be a quarterback. You actually get the ball. If you play wide receiver in an NFL type game, you might get 8 touches. Is a really, really, you've had a great day. Man, you can get that in the first 5 minutes. So you want the ball. So guys that want the ball and get excited, that's right down our alley.
Tom, you spent tonight out at Montrose Football Club, deep in the eastern suburbs, the edge of the Yarra Valley. Montrose are, I think, a Division 1 club in the AFL and having a reasonable season in what's probably recognised as Melbourne's best suburban competition. Your team's going to play a curtain raiser there on Saturday to the Montrose senior team. You're playing against Papua New Guinea in your third game of the tournament so far. But tell us what a night for you as a coach and I guess your group of players is to go out and experience that local football culture that exists here in Melbourne and what you can take home with from such an experience.
Yeah, for us, a lot of the guys, so you've got a big mix. So you've got some guys that actually come here and play before. So we've got a few guys that have done that. And then we got guys that didn't know the game existed a year and a half ago. So for them to come out and see it, they get to see it at the grassroots level. For me, it felt like when I came out here for my first time, we went to Eltham, and it felt like I was back home watching Texas high school football. If you want to rob a bank in Texas, you rob it on Friday night because everybody shuts down and goes to the game. You want to rob a bank here, do it on Saturday morning because that's where everybody heads to is the game.
Good advice.
The things you learn. Tom Foley brought up a good point about there's a real vacuum for like non-professional sport. We play, you can play footy here at whatever level you want to until you're ready to retire.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is a vacuum there. I've always thought, amongst my many grand plans, if the AFL bought real estate in some of the major cities and set up a footy ground and established a couple of teams or a competition in Chicago, New York, you know, even in Wisconsin somewhere, there's that would help to create it from the ground up, build a community football competitions, vibrant competitions that are played week to week.
Absolutely.
Is that
the old build it and they will come proposition?
Buy space for a ground.
We actually have got some people working on stuff like that. Exactly. It's not so much you go to somebody.
So I'm not
to
the first one to have this idea.
You're not. No. But we've all been praying for it since about 2000. The idea is we go when new parks are going in, we try to get into the development side of it and say, just put in this facility for us. You don't have to have clubhouses at this point. Just give us the space. And if you do that, we can have tournaments. We draw people in. And so that's been a big part of what we've been trying to do. And there's a Tulsa, Oklahoma, of all places, is looking at doing it.
Why Tulsa as opposed to anywhere?
Well, they're just putting in some new land. So it's growth. Part of it was the oil, I think, that money was going into some of this stuff that they had to invest into the community. And there's a really good group of the Tulsa Buffaloes, and they went to the board at the city level and tried to get that in. So they're trying to do that.
There are parallels here in the West Australian desert. Like there's a town, Newman, which is essentially a mining town, where the mining company, you forget which one, built a ground, four clubs. They've each got club rooms behind each forward pocket. So, yeah, the mining company in Karratha as well, the mining company's built the grounds. So there's a parallel with around the oil fields in Oklahoma, it sounds.
Yeah, absolutely. And then anything you can do to draw more people. They're doing it with all kinds of different sports. The cities are starting to build facilities that are indoor track with indoor swimming pools. And then it brings in, city owns it. It's not a college. And then they bring all the college sports to those events. So that's how you look at it. And that's how you try to sell it to the city.
What percentage, I know when we first heard football being played in the United States, the general feeling here from afar was it must be expats and jolly good fun for them it must be playing on soccer fields, more power to them. But over the years we've come to understand that there is passion for it amongst American born and breds. Now, what would be the breakdown now of expats as compared to those born in America who've never even been to Australia who play it?
Well, at this point, you can only have 9 on the field that are Aussie. So you have to have at least 9 Americans playing. Some teams don't have any. So some teams in the Midwest might not have anybody at all. So there's a big jump. But it's probably right now about 60 to 65% American, and the rest would be, we call non-American, but non-Australian.
You do play 8-a-side.
We do play 8-a-side. Now, we also have other games that we'll do a 9-on-9 stuff, a version of it.
Yep.
We'll also do a non-contact version, trying to bring people in for the first time, because that's the first thing they think is you're going to get out there and get killed.
Well, what did your friends say? What do people who you run into say when you say that your weekend is mainly taken up by playing Australian rules football?
Some don't understand it. We play enough and put it on social media enough so they get a sense for it. We have a pretty good level of players that are just coming out of college, but most of the guys have no clue what we're doing.
What's Mason Cox, Jason Holmes, and Matt Korchek and their presence in the AFL now as professional athletes playing the sport but being from home soil doing for, I guess, the excitement levels and hopefully the growth of the game as well?
I think it gives it some legitimacy. So when you talk to some of these really talented players, you can get them and say, hey, look at this. This is actually happening. This happened. This kid kicked a goal in an AFL game. This happened.
We've had a revolution here in the last 18 or so months with women's football, and AFLW's really on the path to, well, not only sustainability but importance. And is there a similar movement in the U.S.? Are the girls playing it?
Absolutely. That's been our biggest growth. For the U.S. national organization, we've been sustaining but not growing, but the women have caused some growth. So we're up to over 400 players now. And it's been exciting. It's not just the number of players, but they actually, like, I catch myself now watching their games, and it's not just a beehive of girls running around. They're getting very skillful and figuring it out.
What's your coaching style like, Tom? Are you known for dishing out a spray? You look like you could give one.
I try to stay positive. It's a tough game, and as kids, they're 14-year-olds, you know, men playing at a 14-year-old level, so you have to be very positive with it. If we stay down on them, it's a tough enough game as it is, so getting down on them doesn't help at all. So we're real positive.
What sort of support do you get from the AFL? Is it an annual care package, just this sort of hamper with footballs and footballs and how-to guides and sort of old socks, or is it ongoing support?
It's ongoing support. And there's a small financial part to it, but it's also the organizational stuff that we get from it. And we also get some of their they did a very good job with, I think it was in 2015, about what is Australian football, and they did an ad with an American speaking behind it, explaining the game, and they did a really good job with that. So stuff like that's better than money a lot of the times.
Tom,
why are you the coach? What makes you the most likely coach in the United States? Listen,
the guys are going to love me for this one. So I started playing back in 99. Played for the USA team for 6 years.
You're not a ruckman.
I'm a halfback flank. Halfback flank for me.
You're just a halfback flank.
Yep. I played over 125 games with Denver. I played with about 25 games with the Revolution. Then I coached the Denver team. I'm the only American to win a national championship in the Division I, which is our top division, and I've won 3 as a coach. So that kind of thing helped me. I also have been recruiting Americans. So I don't know if you guys saw the story about Brandon Kaufman that went up to the Suns last year. He's from Buffalo.
Yep.
So I recruited him. I'm one of those guys that goes out and tries to find these elite athletes and convert them. So with all that background, that's what helped me get the job.
Wow, you're an evangelist.
More than an evangelist, he's, I think we've got the Clarko, Alistair Clarkson of American football, 3 Division I championships.
When I came here the first time, Sheedy gave away our jumpers. Essendon sponsored us. And one of the first things he talked about was how you have rock and roll, you just don't know how to sell it. And he talks the story about how when he became a coach for Essendon, he came out and said, I'm a full-time coach. I'm not just going to be a part-time coach. You want me, you hire me, I'm a full-time coach. And so I really took that to heart. And so when I took the job, I might not get paid yet, but I take on that role like that's how it is.
Great, great attitude to have. When you speak to a Brendan Kaufman or a potential quality Australian rules footballer who's never played the game or even seen it before, what's the sell? What do you tell them?
First thing I talk to him about is just the excitement of it, how you get to be quarterback, how you get to get out there. And for Kaufman that was in the NFL, you know, he's playing for Buffalo Bills, I can tell him you can take that 400-page document of plays and just throw it out the door. You never have to look at that playbook again. And then we just talk about the excitement of it, how fast the game is, the fast pace, its tackle, all that. And once they do it once, they're usually hooked. Once I get an American in, we actually get them in a game, they're ours.
It's a great story. It's one that I imagine would be echoed differently with the different International Cup teams. Every nation has a different way that football has come to them. Some of them more local to Australia have had exposure to football. So you're playing Papua New Guinea on the weekend, and I think they've traditionally been pretty strong because they've been able to see Australian rules football, and in some parts of Papua New Guinea, they take that as their game rather than rugby, which is rugby league, which is first choice in most places.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've been in every grand final since we've started this competition. I mean, they're the cream of the crop. They're the top. And so for us to get to where we want to go, we've got to go through them.
So what's the plan? I mean, you've won your first 2 games. You're playing against one of the favourites to win the competition. Do you address this game tactically differently to the first 2 or just go out there and say more of the same?
It's a lot of more of the same. I really do stress the basics. We go in there with the mentality that if we do the basic things right, everything else will fall into place.
Have you got a marking forward line? I mean, the Americans we've seen are all tall.
We've got some talls. We have a lot of talls all around the ground. So I'm really, really excited for that. And if you watch the first game against Ireland, the Irish had a lot of talls, so they were giving them trouble. Once the rain hit, ball got down on the ground, they fought back from that. So it's going to be a real interesting game.
Tom, can I just ask, just before you go, what do you do for a day job? I know you're devoting yourself full-time to this coaching job, but what is your professional background?
I'm a sales rep for a printing company for marketing, and then I also coach high school on the side. I coach high school pole vault also.
Pole vault?
Yeah.
So this is in Austin. You live in Austin? Or
I'm in Denver.
In Denver.
I'm in Denver now.
Oh, you'd like Oleg Markov.
Well, I was going to say there's a natural tie into pole vault, given we've got a son of a world champion pole vaulter currently playing at Richmond. And just quickly, Tom, so you're a Bulldog supporter. You absolutely play for the Denver Bulldogs. So last year's grand final day experience for you we'll touch on in a second. But you have a good friend who's taken his love of the Bulldogs to an extreme with his newborn son. Can you just give us some insight to that, please?
Yeah, so Chris Candelaria has come over here, and he is a rabid Dogs fan. He lives in Phoenix, and as soon as they found out that he made the finals, he jumped on a plane and got over here because he had a ticket, so he came to the game. And about 3 months later, his son, Bonte, was born.
Bonte.
That's his actual name.
Bonte.
Does he take the definite article before? Like, is he the Bonte?
I'm not sure the missus let that happen, but yeah.
Bonte. She drew a line.
And she did draw a line. She's Australian, so she let it fly.
To have an American that discovered and fell in love with Australian rules football is unusual, but not unique. We have a regular contributor to programs here on this station, especially during the evening. Her name's Lisa Albergo. She's from Chicago.
Know her well.
She's just a huge fan of Aussie rules. She's never been to Australia, never been...
Has she got any children? What are their names?
No. I don't know if she does. But Lisa is... as well-versed in the history, not just Carlton, she's a Carlton supporter, but she is totally immersed in the history of Australian rules football back in the 30s, the 40s, goal kickers.
Absolutely. She loves it.
And has never been to Australia. I don't know if she's ever been far out of Chicago. But
Been to Cincinnati because I've seen her in tournaments there.
That is her absolute love is Australian rules football.
Yes. Yep.
Gil is a Dockers fan too. He's written... Yes. I'm sure you're aware of Gil. I think he lives in San Diego. He's written a book about being a Dockers fan, I think.
Who's that?
His name is Gil. I forget his second name.
He came here last year and had his book tour, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we
could go on.
You know what? The AFL's tipped a whole lot of money into the Gold Coast. I don't know how that's going. But there's a bigger market just a bit further away, and it sounds as though if Tom is any indication, Tom Ellis, who's head coach of the USA Revolution,
correct,
that passion for Australian rules football is deep and contagious. So it
really is.
You know what? It puts a smile on the dial. It really does. It's just a great story, and we wish you all the best against tough opposition. It's at Montrose for anybody that wants to get out and watch the International Cup. It's simply go. It's on the AFL website, I think.
Yes,
links.
AFL website's got all the team lists and also all the schedules. So there's two divisions, also a women's competition. But that game on Saturday is at midday at Montrose Recreation Reserve.
Tom, we thank you for coming in. All the best in the big game against New Guinea, and then onwards and upwards. And is the final at the MCG again?
I believe it's going to be a curtain raiser, Tom.
It is next Saturday.
Yes, I think the boys would love to get out on the G.
I think that's the plan.
You know, you could tell them that they're playing at the MCG because it's the Montrose Cricket Ground. So
they're on the MCG in two weeks in a row.
Yeah, so, you know, MCG 1 and MCG 2. Thanks so much for joining us, and good travels for the rest of the tournament.
Appreciate it.
Well, speaking of the Montrose Football Club, we'll find out the other side of the equation after the break, because we're going to have a chat with them and find out what their preparations are in advance of hosting USA versus New Guinea. They've got a connection too with American football because they've got a couple of Americans on the list, don't they, Def?
That's right. We'll be speaking to Rod Bunkle from the Montrose Footy Club, who's also on the US AFL Australian Advisory Board. And he's tied things together, I think, Tom, between the Montrose and
correct. He's been just fantastic for us with them.
We just got an SMS from Carl in West Footscray, and he said he loves your passion for the game and that you're a Doggies fan and that his daughter's middle name is Liberatore. Well, That's not. I mean, that's a middle name. Liberatore. That's
the only thing that could top the Bonte story if he was actually named Bontempelli and then just had Bonte for short. So.
Yeah, the full name. Yeah. My name's Bontempelli Henderson.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kids in Fiji, I think it is, or Nauru.
Yeah, called
Nauru.
Ablett. Yeah.
And, Dunstall. And it was a bit of an early 90s thing at that time.
Unfortunately, they're not a girl and their middle names, well, maybe fortunately. Well, still, Libba, oh, that's not a bad middle name. Hey, Tom, thanks for coming in. After the break, we head to Montrose. I've got a couple of Americans on their list and they are eagerly awaiting the arrival of the American and Papua New Guinea teams on Saturday as part of a big day at Montrose Footy Ground. Nige, thanks for coming in, mate, and sticking around.
Thanks, Fonny. Thanks, staff. Have a great show.
Thanks, Nige.
More Bush and the Burbs when we return. Welcome back, Bush and the Burbs, and great to meet Tom Ellis from the USA Revolution. And, yeah, wonder how they'll go on the weekend. And very shortly, we're going to catch up with the other part of the equation, because having the International Cup here has meant that grounds have been not seconded, but they've been sought out in conjunction with host clubs, and various clubs have made their grounds available for training, etc. But no club is probably more invested in the USA and football in the States, therefore a connection to the International Cup, than Montrose. They're not just doing it on an annual basis as a host, but playing an active role in hosting a couple of their players for this season, and there's been an interchange of players over a period of time. So let's have a chat with Rod Bunkle from the Montrose Football Club. He's also on the US AFL Australian Advisory Board. That's not the Egg Advisory Board. That's the only advisory board I knew of before this one.
What's his name?
Peter Russell Clark.
Peter Russell Clark and Rod Bunkle.
Anyhow, well, I'm sure that there's no cracked eggs or omelets being made, because that USA system seems to be ticking along just nicely indeed. Good evening to you, Rod.
Good evening, Mark.
Very good, thanks. Rod, we just had Tom Ellis in, and more impressed we and the listeners couldn't have been. The SMSs have come through as almost surprised at the depth of passion that he has for football, the depth of knowledge, and also the optimistic view he has of football in the USA. That's something that you'd obviously be well aware of, and I guess it needs to have a partner here in Australia to make it happen. And tell us what role the advisory board plays and what role you play on that board.
Right, so the advisory board is set up really to develop the exchange program to not only bring players out from the US to upskill and them in football, and but also to send players here into clubs over in the States to obviously do the same things skill-wise on the ground as well as off the ground. And the role of the board, which basically we've got three operating people in it, myself in Melbourne, Tony Fairhead, who really has got to have the credit for a lot of the development of the whole scheme with the advisory board in Perth in Western Australia, and Mark Motlop in Northern Territory. So we're now looking, bringing players not only in the winter competition in Melbourne and Perth, etc., but also through the summer competition in Northern Territory. So basically our role is to be the conduit to enable that to happen both ways, so players can come out here, have the experience over a year and play solid football from winter and summer, and also for players to spread their experience and knowledge from here in Melbourne, particularly, and Perth. And now we've actually got next couple of weeks, I think we've got a couple of players going out of Northern Territory up to Denver to play football up there. So it really is about helping develop not only the club atmosphere, but the skills of Australian rules in the States.
And you tap into something that I think would be exciting for young Australian footballers. Having played cricket rather than football through my sporting years, there was always the opportunity for cricketers of a certain level, I would say sub-district up, to go overseas and have a sort of either working holiday playing cricket, or at least be domiciled by a club and offset the expense of travelling. And that's never really been on the cards for Aussie Rules footballers, but this program obviously makes it not only possible, but actually very doable.
Desirable.
Absolutely. And it's at all levels. I mean, Montrose is a Division One Eastern Football League team. So the players are, you know, reasonably skilled in playing our game. But it can go in down into the, you know, second, third and fourth divisions of different competitions, because there are capable footballers playing at that level. And, you know, they can certainly add some, I think, something onto the US scene to clubs over there to help them. Again, I say both on and off the field. And that's what the, you know, the aim of the program is to make that happen, and then provide opportunities from players at different levels in the States to try and fit them with the right club that is actually going to be able to help them develop their skills from the level base that they're at. So it's really critical that the home clubs here are the right culture, that they've got the right people around them to support the player when they come out, because it's, you know, it's a different environment out here than the States, and even though there are similarities. And I think when you talk to Ben, Ben's a good example. He can probably talk from first-hand experience about different places and living in. He's from Austin in Texas, a very successful club in the States. He's come out and played with Montrose, been terrific out here. He's one of the favourite sons of Montrose now. But he can talk about the experience in detail of what it means to be having that level of care from the clubs, looking after them while they're here. And the same thing in the States. We go through the same process with clubs over there to make sure the guys from here are looked after in the right manner as well. So, and I think doing that, we're going to have this organic growth in skill level in the USA, and hopefully see the skills improve. And I suppose the output of that is when we look at IC17, and not to say that the program's had a massive impact on it, because the coaching over in the States and the clubs there are getting a lot better and smarter, and they're getting more of the football culture of training and that sort of thing happening. But there's been, from my vision, a marked improvement on the skill sets of players from IC14 to IC17. So, you know, it is exciting. I mean, it's probably grassroots footy helping grassroots footy.
Rob, it's Paul Daffy. We should mention.
Hi, Paul.
G'day, mate. We might get Ben. You mentioned Ben Carpenter, yep. Nguyen Yu.
Yep.
Now, Ben is the vice captain of the US team. He's playing at Montrose. So have you got Ben? Can we get Ben on the line there?
I've got
Ben
here, right on. I'll hand over to him.
Should also mention, Rod, while I was doing that, Rod was also a past president.
Yeah, Paul, how are you going?
Of Montrose. Good, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic.
Okay, so Ben, how did you come to be at Montrose, and how are you enjoying it, and what level are you playing at there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long story. To make a long story short, I started playing footy in 2014 at the end of the year there. Got the opportunity to come down to Melbourne for the International Cup, and we played a game out here at Montrose against New Zealand. And just seeing the footy culture and the club culture around and all the people that came out to support the club and to support us on that day showed me exactly what club and community football was like in Australia. And after you see that at a, you know, firsthand, it's impossible not to be hooked. So I came out here, moved out here a year later, and have sort of been in and out since. So played a couple games in the seniors, a couple other games in the reserves, but just trying to get a kick, really.
Does that mean you're going to have two games on Saturday?
I mean, I wish. If the body was fit enough to keep up for it, I would absolutely. But no, unfortunately, my allegiances will be for the US on the weekend.
And it's serious allegiance up against New Guinea. We've just spoken to Tom Ellis, the coach, and it's a game that obviously you need to set yourself for, because they are a powerhouse. And I imagine the team will be looking to you, Ben, for a fair bit of on-field leadership with your experience of playing the game down under. Having played as vice-captain with this team now a couple of games in this competition, how do they sort of rate? They're your teammates, but how do they compare, say, to maybe Montrose reserves, or what's the level of cohesion like?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's always difficult because the team comes together once a year. You know, there's players from all over the nation coming together, and we don't really get the opportunity to train. But, I mean, I'm not going to lie. This is probably the most athletic group of men I've ever been around in my life. I mean, we've got people from 6'8 all the way down to the short, quick guys. And, of course, Papua New Guinea is a tough task. They are the defending champs, and, you know, it is a big game. But, you know, I've got to be more confident now than ever that we have the chance to really take it up to them on the weekend.
Ben, do you bring something to playing footy that others don't, your teammates don't have? Like, I often look at rugby league, rugby union players have this big first step, big lateral first step we notice when they play footy.
Yep.
Do you do something that our players don't do because of your particular background?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that you'll be able to notice a lot throughout the U.S. team is we all have different sporting backgrounds, and I in particular came from a volleyball background. So although, I mean, I'm like a, you know, not the largest person on the ground, I sort of have a unique ability to jump and hang in the air. So I like to back myself to take a specky if I may. So hopefully we can get one on the weekend.
As long as you don't get up there and spike.
Well, yeah, no. I've got soft hands, so we'll hope it's
And you must be very proud. Mason Cox, he's now got the number one ruck duty for 2 weeks for the Pies. Jason Holmes, there's at Carlton. It begins with K. It'll
come. Matty Korchak, yeah.
Matty Korchak. These are trailblazers and in no small part, jaw-droppingly successful. I mean, what Mason Cox has done in a short period of time is amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, you know, it's great to have Mason out here. His brother actually plays with my club back in Austin, the Austin Crows. So it's fantastic to have, you know, him out here, you know, blazing a path for American footy players to come out and to see that it is possible for, you know, a Yank to come down under and be successful.
Ben, what are you working here or what are you doing during the week?
I mean, I'm doing as many interviews as you need, sir.
On a lighter note, do the boys understand that after a game it's got to be a beer and a pie? And depending on how accommodating the opposition club is, you don't know which one's cold and which one's hot.
No, of course. I mean, that was one of the sticking points that we had last time we came out here. It was interesting because everyone came into the game, you know, thinking we're here for the serious tournament and it's got to be, you know, all business. But, you know, Montrose was such a hospitable club and they were all offering us, you know, free beers. And there was that awkward moment where you're caught in between whether or not you take it in the end. And, of course, you know, once the dam breaks, everyone was up and the beers were flowing and it was all good fun. So that's what we're really looking forward to. Hopefully we can have a beer after a good win on the weekend.
Now you're a footy club. Now I know that the penny's dropped.
Hey, yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Ben. We've already wished the team all the best, and it should be a great game. And I really urge people, not only in the Montrose area, but just around Melbourne, it's more than curiosity. These are now developed football teams that will have a red-hot crack at Montrose at midday. Home ground.
It's a curtain raiser too. It's not just a standalone game.
Correct.
It's the curtain raiser before the Montrose senior match in the AFL.
So it's USA Revolution versus Papua New Guinea, 12 o'clock start, Montrose
versus,
home ground.
Versus Blackburn is the senior game.
And that's always great to watch top flight AFL football as well. Hey, thanks so much, Ben. And please thank, on our behalf, Paul Daffy and myself, Rod as well.
Will do, lads. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. Another great ambassador for what is a passionate American football, Australian rules football society, community, I should say.
Finally, we wonder how Australian footy has such deep roots. And part of the reason it's such a good game.
Because it's a bloody good game.
You get all these reasons, but basically it's a really good game. That is the major reason it is so popular.
You heard Ben there just through all the official information that was passed on with great aplomb, yes. That he loves going for a specky.
Yep.
Yeah, it's freedom of movement. There's no offside. There are rules, but there's physical contact and the opportunity for great flair. You use your hands and your feet to your own devices. And I've got to say, it's like the old, as we said before, build it and they will come. I've got no doubt that Australian rules football is the best kept sporting secret on the planet. But sometimes I think it's a good thing because I worry what would happen if it truly became global and Nick Riewoldt ended up playing for São Paulo in Brazil or some petrodollars would have had him playing for Paris Saint-Germain Australian rules football team. I quite like the fact that it's ours. And we need to take a break. And when we come back, Mount Eliza Football Club, I'm heading down there on Saturday, have had a nightmarish season with injuries. Mick Dunn remains optimistic. The club is big and powerful. He says they'll bounce back, but they've been through the ringer, and we'll find out exactly what's brought their season undone when we return. Well, in the Mornington Peninsula Netball and Football League, Mount Eliza had high hopes for season 2017, having made the grand final last year. But in a discussion I had with Mick Dunn ahead of heading down to the club on Saturday, I was to find out that things have been pretty tough this season, and they've had a horror run with injuries. So to find out exactly what, who walked under the ladder or ran over the black cat, we've got the president, Mick Dunn, on. How are you, Mick?
Yeah, good, thanks, Finey. I'm feeling okay, but like you said, things don't always pan out the way that you think they will.
No, but just to give it a backdrop, as our discussion went on, the club is still well placed with a huge junior program and an underage program that continues at strength. Now, you can't help for bad luck with injuries to key players, but as long as those building blocks are in place, you would have to say that it's a difficult year, but not a difficult future.
Oh, no, certainly not, Finey. We're proud to call ourselves the largest AFL club in the world. We've got 32 junior sides with 820 players. We've got 7 girls teams and 3 senior sides. So we're certainly well placed for the future. But it's like anything, our senior squad's our brand. It's it's what we put out every Saturday, and it's what puts bums on seats. And unfortunately, this year we've struggled a little bit in the main one.
Mick, it's Paul Daffy. That's the biggest junior club I've ever heard of.
Yeah, it's the biggest one in the world. Without doubt, Paul, it's I do say that quite often, and I say it tongue in cheek, but in all seriousness, we are the biggest AFL club in the world. We've got a huge base. It's an enormous effort, and Fraser Bain, our junior footy club president's doing a fantastic job down there.
So how many of the senior team came through the juniors? All of them, or I know you've had a few recruits over the years, but
how many? No, we've got a really good representation in our senior squad. We've in our grand final side last year, we had off the top of my head, about 14 homegrown players, and of those 14, we had about 7 of them under 22 that played in our senior grand final, which is an enormous effort.
So, Mick, out of that grand final team, how many are playing now? Sounds like, look, how many injuries have you had this year?
No, we've had a lot of injuries, and you always get injuries, but unfortunately this year we've had some horrific ones. We had young Brody Shaw go down in 8 or 9 weeks ago against Aspendale, broke his leg severely, and the game was called off. We had to forfeit the game, unfortunately, and is young Zell White, another one of our young players, broke an ankle, and I think we've got three knee jobs and another broken ankle. So they've all been pretty serious injuries.
I saw you play probably about 6 weeks ago. You're at Pines.
Yep.
It was actually a stirring victory. I mean, Pines were on top of the ladder at that stage. And
yeah,
your boys fought. The Pines just lost their cool that day. Those became undisciplined, and your boys just kept going at it and eventually got up. So it was a very meritorious win. Has that not happened too often this season?
No, look, we're still battling away. We're playing some good footy in patches, but we're not putting it together. And I think it's got to the stage now where the fabric of the side's been peeled back, and we've got probably just a little bit too much youth running around in our side. And as you know, Paul, it's a fine line between just, you know, having the right balance and the right structure in your makeup.
I did develop a favourite player that day.
Yeah.
Number 18, Daniel Gormley. Bushranger beard.
Bushranger beard.
Tough, wiry midfielder. But I mean, he probably he's had it all his life. But a very distinctive kicking action.
I was going to say, how do you like his kicking? He's one of a kind in terms of his kicking.
Well, yeah. just to explain, I think is he a left footer?
Left footer, yeah, yeah.
but he
bangs the ball down onto his left foot and
he puts it on with two hands, Phil Cracker style, but not as elegantly as Phil Cracker. He holds the top of the ball with his right hand, the bottom of the ball with his left. But he had a shot for goal. The ball did not deviate 1 centimetre.
It's accurate.
Very, very effective shot. And he was a tough player that day. He was a real reason why he won. So, and I saw he got best in your victory last weekend. So he seems to be having a good year.
Yeah, well, look, Dan's been one of our guys that come right through our junior ranks and played. I think Dan's one of our older players. He's around about 30, but he's been with us and come right through our junior system and made a really good, really good representation in senior footy for us over a long period of time.
So what's Daniel do for a living? Because the Pines boys, tradies and so forth, but your Mount Eliza boys, fewer tradies than the other teams in the Mornington Peninsula League, I would think.
Oh no, we've got a lot of blue collar down there. I think the general perception is that for Mount Eliza that we're all
you're the toffee club.
All born with a silver spoon now.
That's right.
I might add, I live in Bomb Beach, so I'm not from Mount Eliza, but that's a general perception. But no, we've got a lot of boys in the club that are at tradies and work as bricklayers and concreters and all that sort of stuff. There's a good representation from all walks of life down there.
Fair enough.
Hang on, there's nothing wrong if you can't lay a brick or or change the light bulb.
You're talking to two of the unhandiest blokes ever.
The unhandiest bloke ever is currently speaking.
Well, listen, Finey, you're coming down to our auction night on Saturday night, and one of our...
he's not buying a hammer.
One of our auction packages is we've got five of our tradies putting a day's work together, so you can put a bid in and take them home and get some work done around the place.
That's not a bad suggestion, Mick.
He won't be allowed to leave, but I reckon I'll end up coming back down the peninsula and the missus will keep him.
The offer's there for you. You can put your hand up. I'll make sure it goes up when that auction item comes up.
Well, I want it to be a vibrant bidding process. So are there still tickets available to the night?
Look, what we've done is... we've gone out to our business networks around the area and our sponsors, and it's an invite-only night. There's 80 seats. We've got some really unique items that we've been able to get our hands on. One of them being, and I'm sure this will be of a little bit of interest to you, we're actually going to sell the naming rights to our ground and our senior team for next year, which is a very interesting one.
To the team?
To the team. So the Mount Eliza Footy Club's going to be called the Mark Vine Redlegs next year, or the Mark Vine Mount Eliza Football Club.
Oh, no, I've got better names than that.
I'll give you plenty of opportunity to throw a few up on Saturday night.
I've never heard of that.
Well, hopefully it goes to a responsible person. So it should be a great... I can't wait to come down and spend a night with the Redlegs. I'll catch you then, Mick, and hopefully it'll be the turning point for broken bones and ACLs, and we've seen the last of them for a good long while.
Well, look, we hope so too. It's it's one of those things in footy. You just don't know how you're going to go on the track with injuries. I mean, we've all played it, and we all know how brutal it can be at times, but look, yeah, the welfare of these young kids is the most important thing, and we need to make sure that I was down there talking to a few of them tonight, and we just have to make sure that they get on with their lives and can get back to work and start living life again without worrying too much about how the footy side's going.
Hear, hear, Mick. Look forward to seeing you on Saturday night. Mick Dunn, president of the Redlegs, Mount Eliza Footy Club, but not for much longer. Daff, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie.